It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And in case you're wondering why I always open that way, it's because I want you to hear that in your mind. It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. And if your radio isn't on, it should just click and you know what you're supposed to be doing. So you got to get everybody fully trained, you know, just in case. Easy to forget. Here we are in the studio, live, joined by a non-verbal guest. Adam and his son are here because they're going to take off for the soccer game. We all know that America's soccer dad is always on his way to or from somewhere on a Saturday and usually on a Sunday, too.
Highly, highly likely.
Yeah, so going to retrace some steps from the week and head down south for this one, right?
Yeah, but just a little bit. We're going to Orlando today.
No, it's not so bad.
No.
It used to seem like a long drive. It doesn't anymore relative to anything. Anyway, if you tuned in just a couple of minutes early and caught the end or maybe the whole show for the real estate show, you will hear that they generally ask us how the week was, and we signal through the rooms with thumbs up, thumbs down, or the iffy thing or whatever. Well, this week got a bunch of thumbs up, and I was thinking about this morning. I'd love to sort of summarize the week in a word or a short phrase, and this one was, it felt just about as good as it wound up. It just seemed like there was a lot of momentum going into it, and everything that was going on the news was absolutely terrible, but nobody cared. So maybe it's springtime. I don't know. Maybe it's because Texas announced they're going to open up. But for whatever reason, nobody cared that we got thrown into another couple $1 trillion worth of useless debt and things like that. So I guess we'll do what the world did and just kind of talk about the fun stuff.
Well, I'm going to take personal responsibility for the market this
yeah,
week.
You should.
I was on vacation, and I always do my best work on vacation.
Now, little does he know, it's because I'm holding down the fort.
No.
That wasn't it?
That's not it, no.
Okay. Well, I thought I'd slip it in there, see if it floated. Didn't?
Yep, we did see the passage of the very, very partisan $1.9 trillion COVID relief bill. It's about $1.6 trillion of pork and bailouts for poorly run blue states, and the rest of it is debatable how important it is. I think that the most important part is federal unemployment benefits for those that are out of a job because of the pandemic still today. Those are the people that really need help. The rest of it is very, very debatable. $1,400 checks to everyone earning under $150,000 as a couple, are up to $160,000. That seems a bit of a stretch at this point, whether that's needed if especially if both members of the couple are back to work. Then it's just
it's
a gift.
One thing if that's how much money they make, but they haven't been able to work, give them the money.
Right, right.
But if they're working right through the whole thing, as many in that range are,
then what's the point?
You send them at the same time a bill for something like $22,000 long-term. So anybody who voted for the wrong people this time ought to pull their grandchildren aside and apologize.
I don't know about this one. It just doesn't make a lot of sense at this point. The good news is that the money will be spent. It will stimulate the economy, and it will benefit companies and stock prices. So there's that portion of it, but that is not necessarily the way that you want to see growth in the economy or in the stock market. So anyway, enough about that. The S&P went up by only 2.6% this week. And I say only 2.6% just in comparison, because the NASDAQ was up 3.1% and the Dow was up 4.1%. All three indexes are again positive for the month and the year. And it's a kind of a reversal from last year. The NASDAQ actually lags the Dow and the S&P for the year. A complete reversal of the last few years, where the NASDAQ has just been on fire and the other two have lagged. For some reason, the recent trading on the NASDAQ has been the inverse of bond yield. So every time yields go up, which they have been a lot lately, the NASDAQ declines and vice versa. Mm-hmm. So really interesting to watch. This is not historically the trend with the NASDAQ, but it is this year. So who knows? Excuse me.
It's going around.
Yeah. Outside of the three major indexes, it was an even better week. The small cap index climbed more than 7%, while mid caps were up over 5%. Value stocks continue to outperform growth stocks this year, also a reversal from recent years. Speaking of reversing recent trends, energy is the best performing sector this year, up more than 41%. Financials are the second best, up almost 18%. Communication services are up more than 10%. Those are not sectors I was mentioning in a good way at all over the last couple of years. So
it has been a while.
Interesting to see. Yeah.
It's been a long while.
The foreign markets generally traded higher this week, with Mexico up more than 5%, France, Italy, Canada, and Russia all up more than 4%. China's been under some pressure lately, though. It was down 1.7% this week, and it actually took their market negative on the year. Commodities didn't have a great week, although gold and silver both posted gains. Oil and natural gas both fell. Part of that, natural gas was the real big dropper. And part of that would be probably the winter weather going away for the most part across the United States.
Just can't get any traction on that thing.
No, it can't. It's been so volatile lately. The bond market, with yields rising and money flowing into stocks, had a pretty poor week. Long treasuries fell more than 2% and are now down 13.5% just this year alone. That's the TLT, the long treasury ETF. Outside of the stimulus bill passing, the other catalyst for the market has been the COVID vaccine. The numbers continue to trend lower in the U.S., with almost 20% of the U.S. now of people now having received at least one dose, and more than 10% of people in the United States have completed the two-dose procedure. Johnson & Johnson's one-dose vaccine is rolling out now, too. So on average, the U.S. is administering today about 2 million doses per day, and that number is still trending higher. Supply is definitely not a problem at this point. There are 32 million unallocated doses waiting to be administered. The president promised that by May 1st, all adults would be eligible for a vaccine, but that was setting the bar extremely low. This event should actually happen much sooner than May 1st at the current pace, and all of this is great news. Reopening should progress at a fairly rapid pace from here on out. So it's sort of, I think they're doing the old under-promise and over-deliver strategy. Absolutely. It was similar to the 100 million in 100 days when we were already over a million in doses a day being administered.
Yeah.
So
well, those lies were all on parade Thursday night. What a ridiculous look at things. My God.
I didn't care to watch anything. That one. Well, I don't ever watch those things because they're all ridiculous. So that goes for both sides of the aisle.
The point is, the right people are now vaccinated. Sarah got her second shot yesterday at Moderna like I did. I had a very bad reaction for about a day and a half. You just cruise right through it.
Yeah, it doesn't hit everyone, but if you're going to get it, it's on the second dose, it seems like.
So that would speak well for the people who want to do the J&J.
Yeah, exactly.
In the second dose.
Yeah.
But think about that. All those things weren't available just a few weeks ago. And now we've gotten a major percentage of the at-risk population done. Now it's time to start opening up. And I just wish there were a few more governors out there who understood.
If you are at risk and haven't been vaccinated, go get vaccinated.
Yeah, it's really easy, folks, and it's absolutely free except for a little bit of time. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back after a short break and talk about some more of this. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we have a trivia question as usual, brought to you by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm. You can call Ken at 904-636-7888. Now the deniers, the inflation deniers, are out there, and they're really working hard. And that one of the major things I saw this week was the many references to the core CPI. Why the core CPI? Because it eliminates the two volatile categories of food and energy. Well, guess where the inflation is, people? Publix and the Gate Station. And if you haven't been there lately, you're not going to be very happy when you get there.
Yeah, unfortunately, driving to vacation, we were there a lot at the gate station, and it was rather painful, more painful than it was a year ago, for sure.
Way more. Even 3 or 4 months ago, it's gained quite a bit.
Yeah,
for anyway, sure. One of the things that people are actually talking a little bit about is lumber prices. You've been hearing about what's going on in lumber?
Yeah, this was actually what I was just going to talk about.
Then this will relate precisely.
Yeah, there's several areas like this that are just out of control right now. Lumber, housing, boat storage is crazy right now. RV sales, just everything that is, it's all demand inflation. There's so much demand, and some of the supply chains were cut off last year for a while, so there's just a backlog. And
makes sense.
Those types of things will reverse themselves.
Yes. The price of fuel, for instance, always takes its toll on the motorhomes and that kind of thing.
Oh yeah, as that RVs. Goes up, and then with boat storage right now, the rumor is that some of the local marinas have waiting lists to get in 300 deep, but as fuel prices go up and storage prices go up, guess what happens? People
sell their boats. They have the other best day of the boater's life, huh?
Yep.
Anyway, in 10 months, what has the price of lumber done to an average single-family home? The cost of construction is up how much? And I've got a range of plus or minus $250 on this one. It is more than $500.
I'm sure.
Just so you know. Okay, Adam, anything else on the market we need to look at before we...
Yeah, there is some... One thing I wanted to note about CPI, that's the sort of the inflationary measure that the government uses. Right now, it's up just 1.7% year over year. But no, I think that number is legit. If you think back to a year ago.
Yeah, I know it was falling.
It was, well, not yet. It started falling in March, not in February.
Exactly.
So it was coming off a fairly good level in February, which is this number. Mm-hmm. Next month, you're going to see that the number's bigger. And then the 2 months after that, it's going to be probably quite large. And then CPI bounced back last year, so then it will decrease again. Exactly. So we're going to see some funky data coming out about inflation. It's hard to know what to believe because of the coronavirus just wrecked everything last year and made the numbers look very unusual. And so that's going to affect the year-over-year numbers going forward this year. So watch for that trend.
The way you know if it hits you is if you have a couple extra days at the end of the month where the money ran out already.
That would be a good measure.
That is my favorite way.
Yep. Another thing I want to talk about was small business optimism. It really cratered around the election, and it's been dropping ever since. However, this month it showed a very, very slight improvement. Could be the sign of a bottom for the recent collapse. It hasn't dropped to the level seen around last May because of COVID or in 2008, but the fall has been really dramatic. It's about the third biggest fall in the last 20 or so years. The biggest factor in that has been economic policy uncertainty and then sales expectations. However, the actual sales numbers for February showed a really large turnaround from a -2 to a +7. So right now, the actual sales data is better than the expectation of sales.
Yeah, we saw that in the earnings season wrap-up, too.
Yeah, so that's actually good news. Small business owners tend to lean Republican, so obviously when you get a perceived anti-small business president and administration, there's going to be some worry, and that's showing up in the report. But so far, there hasn't been the actual problems that have been expected.
So far. There is, however, developing, and this is probably not really a surprise. It kind of goes a little against what you might hear from just numbers, but biggest problem that small business people are facing now is labor, quality, quantity, price.
Really funny that is the case because there's so many unemployed people.
Several million still unemployed from
COVID.
But
finding the right person, which has been a problem for the last 5-6 years, it's still a problem today. And the fact is people that have jobs and are good at them, they're getting pay raises like crazy right now because companies understand how hard it would be to replace them.
Yeah. Well, fortunately for everybody right now, anyway, the stimulus bill, the rescue, American Rescue Act, or whatever they're dubbing it, the Porculus, son of Porculus, I guess it would be. Anyway, they were unable to put the $15 minimum wage in that because well, the parliamentarian said it wasn't proper. So they're going to come after that separately. And, of course, Florida already did that. Florida voters, you should be ashamed of yourself. There's still time to get that out of there. Anyway, you have to let the market run these things, and they're not doing it. But in the short run, they're also paying a lot of people not to work. Now, that did get cut down from 400 a week to 300, but 300 a week on top of anything else that you were getting, there's still some people that are going to say, I'll see you in September and we'll talk about this work thing, because that's how long it got extended. So there's a little of that going around. There's a lot of people just not really wanting to move or anything like that. But you know, there's still going to be a lot of unemployment. Ongoing claims are a little better than they were, and new claims are a little better than they were. Everything's making just little bits of progress. But there is a labor problem among a lot of business people out there, and I'm sure there's people listening to the show right now who would agree that trying to find good help is a ridiculous thing.
Right. Yeah, it's just unusual in this type of environment with that many people unemployed.
And counterintuitive,
I guess. It really is. But that's typically a problem associated with full employment. And it's probably right. The best problem for the economy to have, mm-hmm. because it means usually that wages go up, workers get more money, workers can have more freedom to jump between jobs and get a better job, or if they're underemployed, they can move up and get a better job and get to the right level of employment. But that clearly is not the case right now, except in a certain segment of workers. So it's not true for the economy as a whole.
Right. I don't mean to imply to anybody that I don't want people to make more money. I do. I want everybody to make more money.
Yeah, exactly.
But I want them to earn it. I want the market to demand it and then pay it.
Well, the thing about minimum wage, just the term itself, is that it implies that you don't have other skills. You are earning the bare minimum to do something. And even if you go to, there are many, many fast food restaurants that pay more than minimum wage mm-hmm. right now. So if you have developed some skills, you should be making more than minimum wage regardless.
Including probably the basest skill of all, showing up.
Mm-hmm. And the worry is that there are certain businesses that don't make enough money to pay a $15 minimum wage. That hurts people on the lowest end of the income ladder, the same people that it's designed to help. So mm-hmm. it's a real catch-22. It hurts high school kids that are trying to work over the summer. It hurts recent high school graduates or dropouts who are looking for a job. It hurts. It's the antithesis of what they want it to do.
Yeah, it's not getting the younger workforce trained. And training is so critical. And we have these hundreds and thousands of training programs all over the country. The government's always helping this and that by retraining. Best training is go get a job.
It really is.
You learn something from showing up on. All right. One of the things we touched on in the first segment was all the money flowing to the states that have been doing a bad job and to some of the pension funds. Loyal listeners remember probably more than a couple of times us talking about the Central States Pension Fund.
Mm-hmm.
That is the one that's, I think it's home-based in Chicago. A lot of the employers, myself included, from back in the 70s and 80s, were having to contribute to that thing, and it was always poorly run. It was always underfunded. Well, they just got a huge bailout. So they're off the hook now for a while.
Well, actually, you made a mistake there. It was not always underfunded.
Oh, that's right.
Actually,
it wasn't always
overfunded until the government stepped in and said, you are not allowed to be overfunded.
Exactly right.
During the good times. So they made them raise payouts and decrease contributions.
Not factoring in the obvious that there weren't always going to be good times and things like manufacturing businesses. Who knew?
Yeah, the government caused that problem 100%.
Now, Chuck Grassley, who's got a couple of years left and occasionally comes out with something rather bluntly, it's just a blank check and with no measures to hold mismanaged plans accountable. Yeah, Chuck, you nailed it. And therefore, who's this fellow Gray, Gordon Gray, Director of Fiscal Policy at the American Action Forum, he summed it up beautifully. This is the money quote from this article I was reading this morning. Gray said he fears The lesson that Congress is going to learn out of this is that you don't have to make any hard decisions. Rather, you just send money. Now, if that isn't the most beautifully worded little tidbit of the day, I hope we stumble on it somewhere.
Pretty sure they learned that lesson quite some time ago.
All right, when we get back, Adam has another in his series of, I call them, Who Am I? And I have the best headline of the week from this morning. We'll cover all of that and much more. Lines are open, 904-222-8255. So give us a call. Remember, the trivia question is there and all that. Don't go anywhere. We'll pay a couple bills. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
A reminder, our trivia question is still out there. Over the past 10 months, the price of lumber alone has driven the cost of a new single-family home up by how many dollars? It's significant, and there's a pretty good bracket around it. So anybody who wants to take a shot at it should be able to at least help us with the bracketing. All right, I think we've pretty much wrapped up the market itself. I had a couple of things that I wanted to announce, and then we're going to have Adam do his thing. But one of them, I think it was right at the end of last program, I was warning people that there might be a problem in this porculous bill about your future retirement plan contribution limits being frozen. I have heard, but I cannot 100% verify that that got cut out of there. But trust me, I will be watching and waiting, and you'll know if it happens so you can complain about it. But apparently somebody picked up on the fact that it was such a bad idea and knocked it out of there. So whoever that might have been up there, thank you on behalf of all of us.
That's the kind of stuff they put in to, under the Byrd rule, try and justify their costs. Yeah, and you can undo it later, too. So that wouldn't have been the end of the road.
No, and it wasn't going to be right out to the end of the 10-year period that this was going to happen. So you're right, it's a budgetary thing, and probably would have gotten changed. But there's some other proposals we'll talk about, too. Good morning, Marshall.
Gentlemen, how are you all this morning?
Better than good. How about you?
That's great. Well, something for Adam, if he's not already done it, and for your listeners, there is an app called Gas Buddy that will help you find the price of gas in your area. And when you look up there, it shows you what the range is. And the other day I looked up there, and I'm seeing 285 everywhere, and there's one that says 258.
Transposition error?
There's a new place at World Golf Village, International Golf Parkway 95, Bucky's.
Bucces.
So, Adam, on your way to Orlando, you can fill up at $2.58 a gallon.
I wish you had called me last night because I just filled up for the trip today. Darn it. Maybe on the way home I'll stop there. But, yeah, Bucky's is a really good business case, too, if you ever get a chance, do some research. They just came in here from Texas, and it's a really huge thing out there, and I think they're expanding their market to Florida.
Aren't there something like 100 gas pumps at that place? Astronomical?
Well, I just went down there this morning, and it is an entertainment venue without any artists. I mean, just watch, like, for instance, you know, it's Bike Week's been around. We've got a lot of people coming and going. But I do have one question for you with respect to the COVID relief bill.
Yeah.
Now, I do understand we still have this $300 premium for unemployment if you were unemployed because of COVID or if it's just you were unemployed in that time window.
I don't think you have to prove COVID on that, but I could be wrong.
I think if you do, it's pretty easy. It's a low bar.
I'm just wondering if all those people who have lost their jobs with the stroke of a pen in the first 100 days of the new administration, if they qualify for that $300 at least.
Good question. I don't know.
Don't think that hasn't crossed my mind, too. How about these unemployed people who had such skill levels and such job security because of projects? We had 460 miles of fence built, and there were hundreds more to go, and the pipeline was just getting a good start, and then all of a sudden, bang. And so, you know, some of the welders of that pipeline were making 100, 150, 200 grand. There are just a few people certified to do pipelines, and they were in great demand, and now they're in no demand.
I disagree. I think that a skill like welding, you probably won't be unemployed very long.
Probably not. But the point is, you know, just
probably
simple.
Some creative folks who have the need in another area say, look, Dad, you can move here, leave the kids and everybody at home in the house you bought that you got a mortgage on, and we'll put you a place to stay, and we'll give you something reasonable, and then y'all can make your transition as you're ready to do it.
Yeah, companies should
sure
use welders. Need them.
Who are doing a lot of thinking on that,
yeah,
because of what the needs are. Well, again, gentlemen, thank you so much for your show.
Did you want to take a shot at the trivia question, Marshall?
Well, I got mine last week. I wanted to like their opportunity.
I don't think you'd be right anyway. But but
I
that's...
had a gentleman that I was working with that was looking at buying in Nocatee, and his budget was going to be $450,000.
Right.
Because of a lack of available houses, and what happens is, like, they're gone the first week that a new subdivision is turned loose, the lot.
Yeah. Unbelievable.
He's now budgeting $600,000.
Oh, dang.
Ouch.
Now, is it really going to be that much different? No, but it's going to be a lot of difference.
Yes, it is.
I guarantee you.
Yes, it is.
Because not only is it the price of the sticks that went in the house, that developer who has 100 lots that they're going to put online that is not already committed a price for them, their costs went up as you're going along, and they know, hey, I'm not going to be able to put the next 100 out for another 9, 12 months. I've got to add 15, 20% to
right.
the price.
And then they'll sell five of them, raise the price, sell five more, raise the price again. This is
exactly.
This is spiraling inflation that's not counted in the numbers.
I enjoy having my house right where I want to be.
Okay. I don't blame you. You got in at a very good time. Very good.
All right, gentlemen. Thanks so much.
Always a pleasure.
Thanks
Have
for the
a
call, Marshall.
Wonderful weekend. Speaking of the weekend, it's TPC weekend, although it's not anything on
like
the roads like it used to be.
TPC light.
But still, when you see the out-of-town people that look a little confused because they don't know the way around that much, cut them a little slack.
Yeah, it's hard to tell the difference between that and all the people that are moving here right now.
That's the truth, isn't it? All right, who am I?
All right, so in honor of Women's History Month, I wanted to profile a self-made woman billionaire this month. And this lady was born on a dairy farm in Wisconsin in 1947. This billionaire didn't exactly grow up with a silver spoon in her mouth. In fact, she was married to her first husband before she finished high school and divorced 10 years later, had a couple of odd jobs. But the one thing she always had was ambition. She didn't want to be the typical born on a dairy farm, lived on a dairy farm, dairy farmer's wife. That was not what she wanted. She wanted something more for herself. And so in 1975, she was selling custom homes, and she met a roofing contractor named Ken, and they shortly thereafter were married. They became partners in both life and in business. And in 1982, they formed ABC Supply to leverage their backgrounds in the construction industry. The couple formed their business in Beloit, Wisconsin, and she has lived there ever since. She's a mother of seven and a grandmother of 17. Unfortunately, Ken passed away in 2007 at age 66 after falling from the roof at a job site.
Ooh.
Yeah, what he was doing on a roof at age 66, probably not the best idea.
No.
But one of her competitors saw this as an opportunity to come in and buy the company from the grieving widow. Instead, the grieving widow turned around and didn't like that idea, so she turned the tables and bought the competitor instead.
Okay, I love it.
The addition of the $1.5 billion Bradco Supply Company brought ABC's annual revenue to $4 billion with more than 480 locations. Today, the company has over 700 locations in 49 states and annual revenue of over $11 billion. The company employs 12,000 people throughout the U.S. She is no longer the CEO at her choice. She stepped down to become the chairman of the board. She's still very active in setting the long-term long-term strategy of the company. She just didn't want to do the day-to-day anymore. Outside of work, she's very active in Beloit. She and Ken donated the Hendrick Center for the Arts to the Beloit College. She co-chairs Rock County 5.0, an economic development initiative. She started a charter school in order to attract businesses to Beloit. Until recently, she sat on the board of trustees for Beloit College. She's the president of her family foundation. I mean, this woman does everything. She's very active in politics. She's an unapologetic Republican. Recently, this billionaire has also gotten into film producing in an attempt to bring back conservative values to Hollywood-style productions. She's probably the wealthiest woman you've never heard of. Her name is Diane Hendrix. According to Forbes, she's the wealthiest self-made woman in the United States and a net worth around $8 billion, definitely a force to be reckoned with.
Wow.
Yeah.
Cool. Yep. All right, I got some daylight savings stuff and so on. This is the Vanwee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Vanwee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Vanwee.
And I'm Adam Vanwee.
We were just having a little chuckle over this one that I'll give you. You should remember that you have to spring ahead tonight. Physically change your clocks. The real smart ones, like on my wrist here, they'll change themselves. But if you got some old-fashioned ones hanging around the house, you got to actually do it. The concept of daylight saving time is something that was credited to Benjamin Franklin long time ago, 1784. And Franklin did not tell people to change the clocks or turn their sand bottle hourglass of time over earlier or anything like that. He said, just start acting differently. Show up for everything 20 minutes later. Franklin was a kind of a jokester in many respects, and that was a parody. But that was where the first recorded mention of that I could find. Where did it actually originate? You know that one, Adam?
I do not.
In a place called Thunder Bay, Canada. Hmm. And you know what tomorrow is? I'm kind of jumping back and forth here, but it's all tying together.
Sunday?
Tomorrow is 314, otherwise known as Pi Day.
Okay.
What is the closest resort island in Lake Superior to Thunder Bay, Canada?
Lake Superior?
Mm-hmm. Thunder Bay's on Lake Superior. You can see the island. It's a resort island that's only inhabited in the summertime for reasons that should be obvious if any of you have ever been to Wisconsin, Minnesota, Canada.
What is the hotel, the famous hotel?
The Grand.
Grand Hotel, yeah. Mm-hmm.
But anyway, the closest island, the one you can see right off of the shore of Thunder Bay, is called Pi Island. Coincidence?
Probably not.
That's P-I-E, so maybe it is.
Oh, okay.
I suspect there was a woman who had a business on Pi Island for the summertime for all the boaters and made the best pies ever. I don't know. They didn't explain all that, but I kind of got a kick out of it anyway. All right. Dumbest headline of this week. You know how much I love dumb headlines. Came this morning in Yahoo Finance, which I can almost always trust to come up with something really stupid every week. Well, my old friend, the guy I like to quote a lot, Rick Newman. This guy is the tosser of word salads, I call him, because, my goodness, he can go a long ways to make a point that isn't really makeable. This one read, and I quote, Biden is cutting income taxes more than Trump did.
Wait, what?
I am not making this up. Biden is cutting income taxes more than Trump did. Now, a lot of times, things are so stupid, I won't even waste my time by clicking on them.
Well, you know whose income taxes he did cut were those guys working on the Keystone Pipeline.
Yes, they took a very dramatic tax cut, didn't they? But this time, this was so ludicrous, I had to go there and look at it. So, he says the $1.9 trillion American Rescue Plan includes at least four privileges that will lower Americans' tax bills by an average of $33.60. And according to the Tax Policy Center, the Trump tax cuts only cut the average household's tax bill by $1,600. So Biden is a tax cutter because of that, bigger than Trump, right? Not only that, but 67% of the benefit goes to the lowest 60% of wage earners.
Now, I know that to be true with the child tax credit. That one actually will benefit lower wage
earners. So my question to you, is a child tax credit an income tax cut?
No.
Not I mean, really?
It is a...
And I'm talking about a temporary.
That's what it ends up being, yeah, but it's not
a It's a provision that lasts 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't change the tax code.
Okay.
I just jumped it up.
I didn't realize it expired in only 2 years.
Yeah. A lot of their stuff does. So now we get down a few paragraphs. It would be fair to Trump to include the stimulus checks because they were included in this. So the ones Trump sent out earlier as, quote, Trump tax cuts.
He's counting those as... He's counting the stimulus checks as tax cuts?
Yeah, as income tax cuts.
What? No.
No. Think about this. If you're going to give 67% of a tax cut to the lowest 60% of wage earners, they don't pay taxes. Only 50% don't pay taxes. 10% pay just a tiny little bit. So you can't give 67% of a massive benefit to people who don't have anything to cut.
Well, you can't call that a tax cut.
No, and he called it an income tax cut.
You can call it a direct payment from the government.
It's a transfer payment.
Right.
That's all it is. So he did also say that, well, if you scored them the same between the tax cuts and the giveaways, Trump's was actually bigger. I'm not making this up. Slightly more than the savings from the Biden bill. Let's see. But the Democrats argue that they weren't Trump tax cuts because all he did was sign the bill, whereas apparently Biden shepherded this thing through both houses of Congress with a nose ring or something.
Okay.
I only remember him making one comment. We're not going any lower than 1.9. That's the only thing I ever heard. And yet they were his tax cuts, where Trump, who demanded this from the time he was running, through the time they got it passed and implemented, he merely signed it because, you ready for this? The House was Democrat.
Okay.
See? This is what I mean by word salads. You got to stretch to get some of these things. And when I see idiocy, I like to point it out. So my little sub-question to myself was, can you win the lottery without buying a ticket? Because that's what these people did. They won the lottery, and they didn't buy tickets. Oh, well, and Adam mentioned the Byrd rule, the 10-year budgeting thing in the Senate, a lot of bad things. It's unfortunate. The 2017 tax cuts that took place at January 1, 2018, those are subject to the 10-year sunset provision of the Byrd rule. I say if cancel culture wants a new target, I have the best suggestion in the world. Robert Byrd.
Yeah, that would be a good one. That you know, the 10-year expiration on the tax cuts is definitely in place, but there's a lot of time between now and
then.
You just
indeed.
Don't know what will happen.
Right. All right, next one. They're at it again. You've heard me talk about this over and over and over. The people who are doing the 1099 thing are at it again, and now it's for independent financial advisors. Good morning, Larry.
Yeah, quick question.
Yes.
RMD, you don't have anything definite on that, do you?
They're going to go through, I'm afraid. They restored back to what they used to be, and I have not heard one argument to extend the ban. So
nope.
Yep, nothing good to report.
Back to business as usual.
Yep. 70 and a half?
72.
Yeah, it did change to 72.
Yeah.
Okay, it did do that. Okay, that's what I'm trying to find.
Yeah, that's already been.
Yeah, if you were born after June 30th, 1949, your age is 72.
72. Okay, 70, that's good.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, that's plus.
Yep.
Can I make a quick shot?
But of course.
Marshall didn't.
Sure.
10,000?
Way more.
Ooh, that hurt.
Ugly, isn't it?
It's crazy. Okay.
Appreciate the call. Thank you. Bosco.
Yes. Here in beautiful Bike Week, Daytona.
Yay.
A lot of rumbling going around here, baby.
I bet.
Yeah. I'm trying to squeeze this question in and put it together as best as I can with the program that I listen to throughout the week. he made a point of saying that he knew and admired Margaret Thatcher, and that she got to a certain point where she decided to throw the towel in, because she said that their overall system there has gotten to the point that there were more people taken out of the pot, and the government pot, and money, than was put in, and that so that that particular political side was, you know, she was not going to be a winner, you know. I mean, it's a lose-lose scenario. Well, he was quoting the percentage number that we were at here in the United States, and it was approaching 50.
Yeah.
You know, and in his mind's eye, he said it was 50 plus one, so 51%.
Yep.
So if you could maybe speak to that, and I'm going to say 25,000 on your question, but I want to hear your answer.
You're just a little bit too high, and since time is a wasting, it's 24,386.
Oh, just.
And I had $250 on either side of it, so you were really close.
Good guess.
Think about that. The average single-family home has gone up that much in 10 months only due to lumber. We haven't even brought up copper and things like that yet.
Crazy.
Yep. All right, we got to run.
Thanks.
Pardon?
Yes.
We got to run.
We'll call
again
soon.
Thank
you. Bye-bye.
All right, 24,386. Isn't that incredible? I will try to find the number for how much the overall has gone up when you include the other commodities that go into it, because they're all rising quickly. So that's something for next week. Be careful out there. We'll see you again next week. This is the Ben Wee Financial Hour.